Good evening. I'm David Brinkley. The Pentagon sent a task force out to see if the use of drugs in the military in general and in Vietnam in particular is as bad as advertised, to see if fighting units sometimes are so drugged they are unable to fight. Today, the head of this task force, Vice Admiral William Mack, appeared before a Senate committee and told what he had learned.
We had a witness here, Sergeant Charles West, who served in Vietnam. He told us that half of the company involved in the My Lai operation smoked marijuana.
We did ask officially whether there was drug involvement in the My Lai case, and the reports coming back said no, there is no evidence that there was. Now, obviously, Sergeant West appearing and stating so is indication that it was, but it's not really legal and official evidence which we could bring before you. I have a feeling that there was, but that's only my personal opinion.
Field commanders have said that the operational capabilities of soldiers and men in the armed forces have been reduced by the use of drugs. I'd say that endangers the military readiness of my country, if there's any sizable amount of it, and I believe there is.
I think that's a fair statement, Mr. Chairman, and to expand on that a little bit, we look first from the overall point of view of could General Abrams and Admiral McCain carry out their mission as it is assigned with the troubles they have, and we decide, yes, they could, at this point, carry out their mission. We also agree with you that there are many instances where a platoon or a squad endangers some of its members. Maybe a squad mission can't be carried out, and we know this has happened, or a helicopter mission, and there have been people killed who should not have been killed, larger incidents possibly, but we're looking at it really from the overall point of view that we don't feel at this moment that our ability to do what we want to do in Vietnam, for instance, is endangered. In other words, we're talking about a higher level. Lower level, yeah. I agree with you perfectly.
But I've been trying for 4 years to get you to pay attention to this problem. It wasn't until after the hearings before this subcommittee last March that the Department of Defense would even admit there was a problem. And it wasn't until yesterday morning, according to your own testimony, that this task force report was approved. Well, I guess we're getting somewhere.
In brief, the Admiral's report was that the Army is getting young men from civilian life already in the habit of using drugs, that individuals and small units are at times incapacitated and unable to fight. But this has not yet reached the stage that threatens the whole Army's ability to do its duty. In Cambodia today, the North Vietnamese made their strongest attempt yet to capture the capital, Phnom Penh. The Cambodians and their forces were badly outnumbered, but said they were holding on. In Saigon, the U.S. military said 69 Americans were killed in action last week and 615 were wounded. John?
The Paris peace talks went on today for only 3 hours, which is the shortest session so far. David Bruce, the new negotiator sent to Paris by President Nixon, didn't attend the talks today, but instead worked in his office, which amounts to a boycott. Duan Thuy, the North Vietnamese delegate of equal rank, has boycotted the sessions off and on since last December when Henry Cabot Lodge quit. Thuy is expected back in a few weeks, and possibly the talks may then get underway.
This is NBC Nightly News, Thursday, August 20th, 1970. Brought to you by new Excedrin PM, the nighttime pain reliever that relieves pain and helps you to sleep.
When you're trying to sleep, even a tiny pain can turn night into a nightmare of noise. You want Excedrin PM. It's different from simple pain relievers because it combines pain relievers with an extra ingredient to gently help you to sleep. Excedrin PM, the nighttime pain reliever.
Everybody knows a guy who's not very handy around the house. for the thousands of guys like him, Sherwin-Williams developed latex house paint. It makes easy work of painting a house, whether you do it yourself or have it done. With Sherwin-Williams latex house paint, you won't need to buy special paint for masonry, and you won't need primer either. We built it right into the formula. It's a cinch to get good, even coverage, and with no brush marks. You can even go back and touch up spots you missed. Cleanup's easy, too. Brushes rinse out in soap and water. Now admit it, wasn't that easy? Sherwin-Williams latex house paint from the people who cover the earth.
The commander of the National Guard troops who killed four young people at Kent State last May said today that no one gave the order to shoot. Brigadier General Robert Canterbury testified to that today before the President's Commission on Campus Unrest. Canterbury contended that the guardsmen fired when a rock-throwing mob, in his words, began closing in. Actually, the FBI says there was no mob near the troopers. In any case, Canterbury says no officer or non-com ordered the men to shoot.
I immediately run to the right flank, grabbed two people on the shoulder and ordered ceasefire, as did all the other officers.
And after the firing had ended, General, what orders were given or what was done?
I ordered the commanders to order to have the troops return to the, continue the movement to the bottom of the commons, from where we knew ambulances were available and from where we could dispatch them to attend to casualties.
Did you order that an ammunition check be made?
Upon reaching the bottom of the commons, I ordered an ammunition check made and the names of each person having fired a round or more.
Was any review made of fire orders at that time, and were any supplementary or different orders made with respect to the discharge of weapons at that time?
We canvassed all officers to determine whether anyone had given an order to fire. The answer was negative.
I requested that the National Guard be sent in to assist us. I asked the governor for this. I didn't talk to the governor, but I asked his office to assist us.
Were you later called and told that this assistance would be forthcoming?
Yes, within a short time, General Del Corso called me and confirmed this.
How would you describe the situation in your town?
Well, I had imposed a curfew at 8 o'clock, and they started arriving after 7 o'clock, so the curfew was going into effect. This is about the time that the ROTC building was being set afire on campus also. You had to be there to realize the tenseness.
We
had to make decisions, and we had to make them serious decisions during that period. We felt that, in retrospect, I feel we made the right decisions.
From what I've seen in there, it seems to me that the commission is going about it. They are trying to get the truth. It seems pretty unbiased to me.
I think they're getting the truth as far as they're going, but I think it's conflicting reports.
I hope they can do something effective. Something has to be done.
The Reverend Joseph Duffy, a minister in the Church of Christ and chairman of the liberal organization Americans for Democratic Action, has won the Democratic senatorial primary in Connecticut. His election raises a question about the uses of students and young people as political canvassers as being planned by some schools this fall. Duffy tried twice to use out-of-state students to help him in this campaign, but they were so unpopular with voters that he ended up using Connecticut young people only. The out-of-state kids, according to his campaign chairman, were a disaster. David?
For years, the Atomic Energy Commission has been testing nuclear explosions in Nevada. The purpose in all this, if there was any purpose, usually was not explained. Anyway, the commission says now that 250 square miles of Nevada land is contaminated with poisonous and radioactive plutonium, and so it has been sealed off from all human access because it is not safe.
Essex Junction, Vermont is a small town of 10,000 people.
It has no heavy industry. The air is clean, and the people look healthy. But the Water Hygiene Bureau of the Health, Education, and Welfare Department says that the water these people are drinking is unfit for human consumption. It is contaminated, says HEW, with excessive arsenic, lead, and bacteria. But people are still drinking the water and apparently suffering no ill effects. This is the source of the water for the people of Essex Junction. The reservoir covers 75 acres, and the man responsible for the quality of the water believes the HEW study is wrong.
Do you drink this water?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, every day.
Give it to your children?
Yes, sir.
You think it's perfectly safe?
I wouldn't be drinking it if I didn't.
The town manager of Essex Junction said HEW didn't even inform him of its finding.
All I know is what is in the paper, and if what the paper says is true, I think that we should have been informed in a little different manner. And then we could have taken whatever steps need to be taken to correct the problem if one exists. But as far as I'm concerned, the water is no different now than it was 5, 6, 7 years ago. Fact is, it may be better.
Today, 4 days after HEW announced it in Washington, Essex Junction officially heard that its drinking water was bad. Before a regular meeting of the Vermont State Board of Health, HEW regional representative Floyd Taylor said 16 Vermont municipalities, like Essex Junction, had totally unfit water. 66 had poor water, 65 undesirable water, and only 9 communities had what was described as good water. The HEW spokesman suggested that when they make other in-depth surveys in other states, they will find the water just as bad. The only solution HEW has offered is a joint federal-state program to assist communities get better water. And that may take years. Dean Brayless, NBC News, reporting.
Psychotherapy.
The world's first psychedelic psyche-doodler.
Psychotherapy.
Get a calendar of inner peace and tranquility.
Psychotherapy.
When you buy Flair.
Psychotherapy.
The new way to write.
Psychotherapy.
Now in 10 psychedelic colors. Flair's smooth, tough nylon point makes a rich, vivid line that can be fine or bold.
Psychotherapy.
You get it with Flair.
Psychotherapy.
Look for this display at your favorite store. Flair.
White Rain announces a new employee benefit for girls with hard-to-hold hair. It's the new spray-as-you-work plan. White Rain Hairspray and its direct-to-spray top directs the spray where you need holding most. Direct to all those hard-to-hold places. White Rain, the easy-to-use hairspray for hard-to-hold hair, because you've got better things to do in your coffee break. And now new unscented White Rain, too.
NBC Nightly News continues, brought to you by Kent Cigarettes. Light up a Kent and let the good taste happen. What a good time for a Kent.
How about that new Kent menthol?
Wow, Kent got it all together.
Kent got it all together.
Kent has got it all together.
New Kent Menthol 100s. Brisk, breezy menthol flavor, exclusive micronite filter, and good rich taste. They're all together now.
All the refreshment of menthol.
There was a growing feeling today that the Middle East peace talks may get underway in some form or another sometime next week, possibly after the Israeli cabinet meets on Sunday. Some diplomats believe Israel and the Arabs will accept a compromise under which the peace talks would be held at the foreign minister level, which Israel wants, and in New York, which the Arabs want. There is also some talk that Egyptian President Nasser may be coming to the United Nations, possibly to the UN anniversary celebrations where he could meet President Nixon. In Washington today, the State Department seemed relieved that things looked alive again, while in Israel, quite specific charges were made that the Egyptians had cheated on the ceasefire.
The evidence consisted of charts and aerial photos released in hopes of convincing world opinion, if not the U.S. State Department. Only 4 new missile sites were disclosed, But Israel says it has proof that between 6 and 15 batteries have been moved into the ceasefire zone. Some, they say, are as close as 12 miles from the Central Canal in this area for the first time. Concerning the dates the photos were taken, officials said newsmen would simply have to take the word of Israeli intelligence. Accepting that, pictures made the day before the ceasefire showed construction incomplete. Those taken from 6 to 9 days later showed construction finished and missiles installed. All were Soviet-made SAM-2 missiles, none of the later SAM-3s. Officer said all this was not catastrophic, but a serious challenge to Israeli air superiority.
These practically changes the former position by the fact that the range of the same missiles, that is about 40 kilometers, now in parts of the canal, not only covers the canal itself, but covers area east of the canal in Israeli-held territory.
The missile controversy has caused a growing uneasiness here and disillusionment over the entire American peace initiative. This demonstration protested that initiative, the umbrellas symbolic of Britain's Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain in Munich.
We feel that it's sort of a takeoff on the illusions that the Arabs have been living in with through centuries as part of their religion, as part of their culture as a people. I don't think it can come to anything because we see right now with the moving of the missiles and all that just exactly what confidence and faith you can have in our erstwhile enemies.
Well, I seem to feel that our present government seems to be under great pressure and from external governments, and I think that they should take a stronger stand. I'm very much afraid of the seemingly appeasing attitude that they have right now towards the present situation.
Speakers charge that the missile controversy is evidence the U.S. can't be depended upon, that Israel is once again alone. The demonstration was small, but there's evidence in newspaper editorials and opinion samples that the ideas expressed here have growing grassroots support. The worry is that such opposition could ultimately undermine the government and limit Premier Golda Meir's freedom to maneuver and compromise when and if peace talks get underway. David Burrington, NBC News in Israel.
Jordan's King Hussein is in Cairo tonight talking with Nasser about peace talks and guerrilla problems. It's reported and confirmed by diplomats that Iraq, a couple of months ago, tried to topple the Syrian government. It didn't work, and hundreds of Iraqi supporters are said to be in Syrian jails. David?
3 years ago, the Navy dumped a cargo of mustard gas from the Army off the coast of New Jersey. Today, it had a shipload of obsolete ammunition to dump and had first planned to dump it in the same place, near the old mustard gas. But it said as an extra precaution, it would haul it about 80 miles south to dump it, so if it exploded underwater, it wouldn't burst open the cans of mustard gas. This morning, off Delaware Bay, it sank an old ship and 5,000 tons of ammunition. It did explode. But so far as we know, there was no damage except to the sea life.
There have been a lot of reassuring statements about what happens when ships with poison gases and munitions are sunk. The fact is that no one is sure what will happen. Even though the Navy isn't admitting it, there have been at least two underwater explosions. In addition to the one today, another Liberty ship, the Walker D. Hines, was scuttled on June 25th, and the ammunition aboard also exploded. At the time, it was carrying 6,500 tons of obsolete conventional weapons. 30 seconds after the ship went under, there was a gigantic explosion. The Navy claims there was no damage to the escorting surface ships, but authoritative sources say one of the vessels suffered damage to its navigational system, even though it was 5 miles away. The difference between the June explosion and the one today is that in June, the ship was very near the mustard gas, which was sunk 3 years ago. Mustard gas can solidify and float to the surface if jarred by an explosion, and there could be water contamination. But so far, the Navy has conducted no tests to find out just exactly what did happen. Robert Goralski, NBC News in Washington.
The Russians accused China of another crime. It says the Red Chinese are using for propaganda broadcasts radio frequencies reserved for airplane and ship communications in violation of international law. So when a ship captain or an airplane pilot tunes in trying to get navigation information or weather reports, he instead gets a Chinese broadcast going on about the thoughts of Chairman Mao. President Nixon went to Puerto Vallarta on Mexico's west coast today for a meeting with the President of Mexico.
President Gustavo Diaz Ordaz met about a year ago just across the border from Texas. Now, just 3 months before the Mexican leader finishes his term, they met again.
Mr. President, on this occasion, I want to pay tribute to the leadership that you have provided for this country over the past 6 years.
Señor presidente, quiero aprovechar esta oportunidad para rendir tributo a la dirección que usted le ha prestado a su patria durante el curso de los últimos 6 años.
You will go down in history as one of Mexico's great presidents and as one of the great leaders of this hemisphere and of the world.
The two leaders were given a cordial welcome as they rode through Puerto Vallarta. This afternoon, they talk business. It's expected they will soon announce a plan for resolving the border confusion that has resulted at several points because of the course of the Rio Grande River. Generally, there are no major disputes between Mexico and the United States. They're friendly, and the two presidents wanted to again demonstrate this friendship. Herbert Kaplow, NBC News, in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico.
Whatever happened to Esther Williams? Remember the swimming champion who learned to swim pretty for the movies? Well, today, Esther's still swimming.
But now just for me. Sometimes with my daughter, Susie. You know, when you have teenagers to keep track of the years for you, you begin thinking about living a little smarter. Stay on the young side. Smarter living means sensible exercise, sensible eating, starting with breakfast. And we like Kellogg's product 19 because it has 100% of the minimum daily adult requirements for vitamins and iron.
Don't forget, Mom, it tastes delicious.
Want to get back on the young side? Well, start with delicious Kellogg's product 19.
Mom, what year did you win the Nationals? Wasn't that in 19?
Eat your cereal, dear.
The Secretary of the Treasury will say in a speech in Salt Lake City tonight that the deficit in the federal budget this year will exceed the official estimate of $1.3 billion. The Wall Street Journal reported today that some economists feel we haven't had a recession, and yet we haven't had a recovery either, and they are thinking of calling the present state of the economy a retardation. The Senate this afternoon approved a measure which would make it impossible for the American government to pay Korean and Thai troops in Vietnam higher rates of combat pay than Americans are getting. Up to now, that's been the practice. Prices rose today on the stock markets. On the New York Exchange, the Dow Jones Industrials gained more than 5.5 points, and the value of an average share went up 26 cents. On the American Exchange, an average share gained 2 cents. Volume was moderate on both exchanges. The opera Rigoletto was playing in Santiago, Chile last night, but was interrupted when a male singer, a baritone, took a deep breath during an important aria and swallowed a chicken feather. David?
If all the talk and promises about cleaning up automobile exhausts come to reality, it may reach the point where people will bend down over an automobile exhaust pipe to get a breath of fresh air. But in the meantime, a Senate subcommittee voted out today a bill to require a non-polluting automobile engine by 1975. The automobile industry says it can't do it that fast, that it needs another 10 years. Senator Muskie, who wrote the bill, said it sets the standards and leaves it to the ingenuity of the automobile builders to figure out how to do it.
When newspapers put out headlines like Detroit Sees Big Year, that means things look good for the American carmakers, Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler. But now, Detroit is no longer all-American. Nobody says much about it, but the bug is big in Detroit, as it is everywhere else. So big, in fact, that it is grabbing more than 13% of the total car sales in this country. This year, finally, Ford is reacting to the import invasion. Now there are little American cars built to beat the bug. Ford filled Las Vegas with dealers this week to show off its 71 line, including the Pinto, a sort of a pony-sized Mustang that sounds like a bee and features an engine made in Germany. The company is so high on the Pinto that it arranged for Henry Ford II himself to make the first pitch.
They're cute and fun, and I think they'll appeal not only to the younger people, but to the whole spectrum of age groups in this country. We think we've got a good car. We think it's going to be competitive with the imports, and we think we're going to get some incremental sales, that we're going to be able to take away a substantial part of the market that they now enjoy in the United States. And in order to maintain our proper share of the market, we felt we had to introduce a car into this segment.
Chevrolet, which makes the Vega, was amused that Ford chose Las Vegas for its premiere. Vega, which is all American-made, stuck to Detroit and classic salesmanship.
It's a nice car to own. It's pleasant to drive, has great performance, it's comfortable, and it's a good car for a single person or a family, for that matter. So it has a wide appeal to a great many people today. But the economics, of course, are very significant as far as the car itself is concerned. But more than that, it has beauty, economy, performance, a lot of alluring things that really are very appealing to America.
There are similarities in both American small cars. Pinto and Vega zip around nimbly. Both stress easy care, save gas, and sell for an undetermined but presumably low price. Both will hit the market next month, and about 400,000 of each will roll off the assembly lines this year. But they don't have the domestic market to themselves. American Motors has been out for months with the Gremlin, and both newcomers are going to have to hustle to catch it. In most places, people have to wait for delivery of Gremlins. Detroit has a habit of turning sporty little cars into placid big ones, as Ford did years ago with its Thunderbird. That's why the new cars are called subcompacts. But Volkswagen, among others, survived all that and took a bigger chunk of the American market each year. Now it's facing its first major challenge from the American companies. Steve Delaney, NBC News.
Thank you and good night for NBC News.